So, look at you bravely soldiering on.
I know. I'm a martyr for the cause.
You are.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised you're not in hospital.
Well, I actually have been to hospital.
Oh, have you?
That's a different story. I'll tell you that later. But no, I've just tested. I've not got COVID. I have got borderline man flu, I suspect.
It's that serious.
But I'm willing to soldier on for my public, because I know they want me.
They do.
Especially when I'm feeling ill and grumpy.
Great.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 325 of the Midfaith Crisis Podcast. My name is Heroic Nick Page.
And my name is Grandpa Joe.
Oh, yes, you see, now there's a great thing to start with, isn't it?
Come on.
Yeah. Let's just start with that announcement. Unto us, yes, a boy is born.
He sure is. And he's a beauty. I mean, obviously, he is the greatest baby in history because I'm a grandparent now and that's how it rolls.
Congratulations to you all.
Yes, thank you.
That was lovely to see.
Yes. Yep. We put a little pickup for you all. We're very excited. That's great. So yeah, we should probably get on with other things. But that's all I'm thinking about.
Yeah, well, so look, in the light of this great announcement, I can't be bothered with church notices of any kind. No. Let's just talk about how you are about it. You got a little grandson.
I have got a little grandson, and his name is Quinn Brian Davis, and we've only just stopped crying about the Brian bit because of course he was named after my brother Brian, who passed away last year. So that is a wonderful, honouring and incredibly emotional thing. I think my sister-in-law hasn't in fact stopped crying yet.
Oh, bless.
Because it's only 5 days since he was born. So
excellent.
Yeah, we're all off down there at the weekend and very excited to see him and my son and his wife as well. So yeah, very good. Very, very exciting. Yeah.
And apart from that, how's things been going?
Well, you know, this is a better season of life. I mean, not just because I'm a grandpa. I don't know if I mentioned that. But I'm loving the longer evenings, which means you get out for walks more. I've discovered the perfect antidote to watching the news, and that is listening to birdsong. If you find yourself accidentally listening to the news, just switch it off and go out and listen to a bird. I mean, wherever you are in the country, you can generally hear a robin. Even in the centre of a city, but also blackbirds and blue tits and chiff-chaffs and wrens. They're all around. They're all doing their thing.
Yeah, so what you're saying is you should avoid Twitter
and
go and listen to actual Twittering.
Yes, it's exactly what I'm saying.
Be much better.
Yeah. Or as we should say, Xing.
Oh, yes.
The birds are Xing now, aren't
they? Sadly,
they
are not allowed to tweet anymore.
No, they're not. Yes. So more than that, we are planning our little undefined Easter thing on Easter Sunday. So that'd be 8 o'clock in the morning in front of Sea Lane Cafe. Anyone's welcome to come along. Set your expectations low, but we're going to have breakfast at Sea Lane Cafe afterwards, and the breakfasts are particularly good. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, that's going to feed in nicely to what we're going to talk about later, which is how we celebrate Easter. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, good. And how about you, dear boy? Clearly under the weather. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I've got a bit of a cough and a cold and stuff like that, and so not feeling very good. But as I said, I did go to the hospital this week because it was a follow-up appointment.
All right.
To all the stuff on my throat that I've been having. But a funny thing happened because I was in the hospital, you see, and I'm talking to the doctor.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, look, basically I've had everything and it hasn't revealed what the cause of this is. So, you know, I said I've gone off caffeine and alcohol for 2 months. I've done this. I've had an MRI scan, and then I've had a gastroscopy. And she looked at me. She said, "Oh, you had a gastroscopy." I said, "Well, yeah." She said, "What? Why did you have that?" And I said, "Well, you asked for it." I didn't like suddenly decide. I didn't think, you know what? You know what I really fancy? Really fancy gastroscopy. I've never had one. I just want the experience.
Excellent.
Well, that was completely unhelpful, really, but helpful. You know, I'm not knocking there because it's just one of these things. But yeah, there we go. Perhaps I could have got away without that. Who knows? Yes, talking of old things collapsing and breaking down, by the way. Mm. Yeah, a bit sad this morning because my lovely Volvo that I've had for I don't know how many years and is finally having to go to Volvo heaven.
Ah.
Took it into the garage this morning and he rang up and said, well, it'll cost you X thousand pounds if you were to do it and the car isn't worth that much. So there you go.
This wasn't the car that was caught in the flood, was it?
No. This one is our old tanky Volvo who has been with us through thick and thin and kept going, basically.
Yes, indeed. I feel like it's been around forever.
Yeah, so that's a lovely car, but it's time to say goodbye to it. I was reflecting, actually, coming back from the garage, about how, in a way, sort of running an old car, or any car, I suppose, but an older car particularly, is a bit like mid-faith crisis. You know, like when you start out, it's all fine, it all smooth, runs smoothly along, you know, and then gradually you find out, you know, it needs more and more repairs.
Yeah.
More and more patching together. And then at some point it comes to a point where it's just not worth the effort.
That's exactly. You need a new car.
Yeah, exactly. You need to start again, really. Yeah. So I think it's a metaphor, really. But I mean, you know, there it is. It is what it is. I should be sad to see it go, but there we go. That's my week, really, so far.
Well, thanks for doing this and for soldiering on so bravely.
I'm not going to make a big thing out of it, but I would like a certificate and a badge. That's all. That would be great. Yeah, so that's my week. A few challenges. I've been really helped by rereading Meditations for Mortals, following your praise of it last week.
Yeah.
Because one of the ones in there is so helpful because he says, you know, we have this idea that life should be free of problems. At some stage, you will get to a point where life is free of any problems.
Yeah.
And that is never going to happen.
Yes.
It's just not going to happen. Problems are life, in fact, and challenges. So I just found that so helpful this week because it's not been the easiest. But anyway, there we go. So, look, listen, we're going to talk about Easter this week on the grounds that it seems rather imminent. But first, I think we've got a couple of items of feedback, haven't we?
Yeah, let's just do this. So Stuart said, hi, Joe. Justin Briley on a recent vodcast this week.
Is a vodcast?
Yeah, video podcast, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a podcast with vodka.
No, sadly not. Well, we could start that.
I think we should. Anyway, make the whole thing much more bearable, although I suspect mostly our audience need it more than we do. Anyway.
I suspect so too. First thing on a Saturday morning. Sorry, I'll carry on. Thank you.
Yeah.
Justin Broyley on a recent tequila cast cited a curious statistic for which I cannot find attribution. It seems that Generation Alpha is perhaps something new. They are returning to the church in larger numbers than Gen Z. The odd observation is that it is young men leading the way. Is this how revival starts? Grace and peace, Stuart.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've given up looking for revival.
So I
do think it's an interesting phenomenon. And I've read articles about it elsewhere. I don't know about young men. I suspect more people will return to Christianity as it becomes less fashionable.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, as it becomes less official, less authorised, less the sort of standard thing to do, and more, it will become more radical. This is actually how it works in many countries of the world where Christians are persecuted, in that actually it becomes a way of identifying with anti-authoritarianism, really.
Yes, sure. And I've heard that the church grows best under persecution, which is not something I've ever particularly wanted to invite into my life, but it does make sense. And I think also, I mean, I've not heard that stat, but I've certainly heard stats about radicalization and young men. So it makes sense that a sort of more fundamentalist brand of Christianity would appeal perhaps more.
Well, that is, I think, a danger, isn't it? I think that perhaps it depends what brand of Christianity they are coming to. And are they coming to it to reinforce their prejudices?
Yes.
I don't know. But also, a question I have out of this: what the heck is Generation Alpha? I lost track.
Yeah, I don't know where we
Gen
are.
Gen Y, I don't know. Where are we on? How's it gone backwards? Surely that's the first generation, isn't it? Anyway, yeah.
Well, maybe it's gone round again, like the car registrations used to, and it's
starting again. Yeah.
Anyway, Jeff says, "Hi, Nick and Joe. I was introduced to the MFC with the Martin Joseph interview. After one particular episode, my phone started to play episode one and have been catching up ever since, up to about 140 now. So in 3 months, I've cycled through about 5 years. As it's early April, I'm assuming it will be time for the Christtide episode, which leads to my question." He says, "I heard once that Orthodox theology says that we are atoned by Jesus' incarnation rather than death or resurrection." He says, "Could there be an episode exploring this?" And that's from Jeff. Well, Jeff, how do you know there hasn't been? Would be my first question.
We have done a couple of episodes on the atonement, I think, and I'll put the links to the show notes. I'm not sure about that statement, Jeff. I'll have to come back next week. I'll do a bit of digging.
Yeah, yeah. I think Richard Rohr would be of that opinion as well. So I'll have a little look around for what he says on it as well. Great. Okay. Let's leave it there. Why don't we sort of launch into Easter a little bit? And specifically Holy Week, which is coming up, I guess. Does Holy Week start this Sunday, or is it
Palm Sunday normally?
Palm Sunday. Well, that's good. So by way of intro, can I talk a little bit about guilt and the mid-faith crisis and Easter?
Yeah, you were talking to me about this, and do you mean guilt as in, not as in sinfulness?
No, not
as in Good Friday, but in guilt about the feelings about it?
Yeah, I think guilt that it's somehow, you know, hard to, I think especially for those of our listeners who perhaps don't attend church anymore, it's very easy to let the season just slip away without any thought of the events or the story or the passion and all those sort of things. I think there's a feeling that Easter can be a bit, you know, kind of meh after mid-faith. Well, I'm not quite sure what this means. And very often we're not encouraged to question the doubting issues that come up at times like this. If we do go to church, and maybe this is one of the times of the year we return to church, we know we're meant to be overwhelmingly sad and repentant on Good Friday. Perhaps if you're going to a more traditional church, they're gonna labour the fact that, you know, Jesus died for your sins, and, you know, we've got to feel pretty bad about that. And then, of course, if we go on Sunday, we're going to be all the festival shouts and, you know, Christ is risen, and a sort of a sense that we should be perhaps a lot happier than we are. I still remember a worship leader saying, "Aren't you happy that Christ is risen? We'll notify your face," you know, and that sort of guilt-inducing things. And like I say, people may have lots of questions about the Easter story, in terms of either literalism, you know, is this historically true, or is it just an important story that we need to learn from? So there's all those kind of things rumbling around in the background. And I think, you know, my perspective is, for those for whom, you know, we want to hold on to faith, even though we're reinterpreting it, even though we're seeing perhaps the birth of a new kind of faith, Easter is still important. So how do we kind of engage with it, I suppose?
Okay.
So there's a little intro. Any thoughts?
Many thoughts, really. Yeah. I would say, firstly, look, you are not the victim here, Joe.
No, sure.
How you feel is up to you.
Yeah. Thank you for your pastoral concern.
It's what I excel at, you know. Well, I do feel, I think it's not about our feelings. No, it's about identity.
Yeah.
I think naturally church services will, of any kind, try and make you feel something. That's important.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not a bad thing.
Okay.
That's important. Yeah. And if that gets overwhelming because you don't feel that way, that's tricky. But I don't think it's about feelings. I think, as I said, it's about identity. When we talk about Easter, we are actually talking about, along with baptism, one of the Christian practices that actually predates Christianity.
Mm.
In that, it was based on Passover initially.
Sure.
And like Passover, Christians saw it as an identifying story. This is about who we are. You know, this is about our identity as followers of Jesus. So I think that's the key thing, to try and detach yourself in a way from your feelings about particular expressions of Easter that you've experienced. Because I'm quite, as you know, I can get a little bit doctrinaire. I don't. It's not an optional extra Easter. Easter is a Christian distinctive. You know, this above everything else, and in the church year is the Christian distinctive.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
So I'm guessing what you're struggling with is that thing of why I'm not feeling what I'm supposed to feel. Is that how it is?
I mean,
you feel guilty in missing it. You feel guilty in not going to what used to be such a big part of your year.
Perhaps so, yeah. I mean, I have to say, far less so of recent years, but certainly at the beginning of my own sort of mid-faith journey, I did feel quite guilty that somehow Easter wasn't as important as I knew it should be. There's the should. In my life and everything. I mean, now I come to a much more settled position, but I imagine there are listeners out there who are in a similar place who are just going, death, resurrection. I kind of know this is really important. And I understand that this is the center point of our Christian faith journey, but I'm struggling to connect with it.
Okay.
So that's what I'm hoping we can help people perhaps come to afresh.
Sure. Well, I mean, I want to push in slightly to that as well, again, in that, all right, maybe it's worth at least looking at that feeling of guilt.
Yeah.
You know, like, feelings of guilt are not always wrong.
No.
Especially if you are actually guilty.
Yes.
And that's when I feel a guilt feeling is appropriate at that point. Yes. You have, in fact, done that murder. You should feel guilty. So maybe there is something genuinely that you're missing.
Yeah.
Maybe there is something that you think, I ought to be doing this because I used to do it and it meant something. And it's an invitation to rediscover that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you are missing something important. It's not for me to say, but I think that it's worth always thinking about that. As I said, I don't think it's about how you feel particularly. It's about what the story is and how you react to that, how you as an individual react to that. But I do think it's really important. This is where I come down to. I think it doesn't matter where you are or what your particular situation is, to commemorate particularly Easter itself is to engage with the historic stream of Christianity and identify with our identity in Christ as followers of Jesus. I think that's the key thing. And then we can perhaps shape a commemoration that is appropriate for us and our situation. And still, I think that has a contextual connection.
Great.
With what Christians have always done.
Okay, sure. Well, that leads to the next obvious question. How do we go about that? How would we shape a commemoration for Easter post-MFC or during our mid-faith crisis?
Well, what I'd like to do, and I know you love these sections, is I'd like to talk about Christian history a little bit. and really about how the church developed Easter, how it has been celebrating Easter. Because the assumption is we've always done what we do. That's not quite true. But with Easter, it's, I think, at least closer than with most of the other festivals.
Okay.
You know, I talked about how Easter is around a Passover, that's making it predate Christianity, essentially. We do know that the iconography of Jesus as a Passover lamb, and so the identification with Passover happened very early. Paul talks about it in Corinthians, I think.
Yeah.
So we know that sort of in the mid-50s, at least, that connection was already being made. There's a letter... I think it's called the Epistula Apostolorum.
Lovely.
Which I love saying. Epistula Apostolorum. It sounds like a plant, really, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
You've got, look at that beautiful epistula. That comes from the mid-second century, I think, and that talks about the instructions for keeping what seems to be a sort of Passover. And that essentially is, on the Friday night, an agape meal, which is a communal meal with the Eucharist in it. But and then a vigil, an overnight vigil until dawn, until cockcrow, essentially.
Okay.
And then a feast. So Passover / Easter in the early, well, in the sort of mid-second century, for some Christians at least, was a meal together, a fast overnight kind of thing, and then a feast.
That's my favourite time to fast, by the way, just after a meal.
just after
a big roast. Yeah.
I don't know how they combine that. But anyway, I mean, certainly by the later second century, so about 190 with Irenaeus, right, you're looking at an overnight vigil and a fast and a feast. That's the key thing, fast and feast. And you break your fast on the third hour, 9 a.m., and so that they didn't commemorate Holy Week as such in the sort of second century. That comes later, but they did commemorate Passover / Easter.
Okay.
With an overnight vigil and a feast, a fast, a vigil and a feast. And I think that might help us with a sort of shape straight away. In terms of the rest of it, that there's a pilgrim called Egeria, and she went to Jerusalem in about 380. And by then, there's much more timetabled, as it were.
Okay, right.
So there's Palm Sunday sort of celebration of procession. And then during the week, they would have their normal daily services, but the readings would be, you know, about the Passion. So they would commemorate that. And then again, you would have you'd fast during the week, by which they didn't eat during the day. They broke their fast at evening. It's not kind of a total fast. Right. And you'd have a vigil on the Thursday overnight, an assembly on the Good Friday, a sort of quietish, reflective Saturday, and then early Sunday morning, the Eucharist celebrated. But that's not till about 380. But by then, Holy Week is sort of taking its shape.
Mm.
So what I'm wondering, the reason for doing that is not only because I enjoy it and because I know you don't,
yes,
but because I think it might help us actually something.
Well, how would it shape yours?
Well, if we go back to first principles, if we go back to saying, well, that's what they did, then maybe whatever you do for Easter, it should involve a fast and a feast.
Yeah.
And a time of reflection, a vigil.
Yeah.
A watching.
Okay, so three things. Fast, feast, vigil. Got it.
Yeah, and then you could add in reading the story.
Yeah.
Because that's what they did in Holy Week in 380. You know, in other words, we could shape something which is about, well, what if you spent the week doing the relevant readings, at least, going back to the story and seeing what happened. And actually, I have a timetable, because I did a book on Easter many years ago.
You did a very good book on Easter, let's just call it what it is, The Longest Week.
Yes, so there's a Longest Week timetable, which I will put on the website.
Thank you.
And that is kind of like the readings for the day. So you could at least sort of do that during the week. And then what about if you had a more quieter, meditative Good Friday, you fasted from certain things, maybe you fasted from, I don't know, TV or something like that. The something was put aside. Something wasn't there that would normally be there.
Yeah.
And then maybe a time of prayer, reflection, extended.
Yeah.
It could be a walk. It could be all kinds of things. I don't know how you do you.
Yeah.
And then you prepare for a feast on Sunday. And what I would say about the feast is, ideally, from my point of view, from my perspective, my tradition, it would involve communion, because I think that is the ultimate retelling of the story, as it were.
Sure.
But I think that it's fast and feast, you know, it's somberness going through to joy, however you want to shape that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that helps, but for me
that kind of allows
you to make your own shape of celebrations. And I think maybe, you know, if you haven't been to church, it's not, you know, it's not impossible. You could go to a church.
Yes. Maybe a church in a different tradition, for example.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. Mm. I think if you're struggling with that, go to something you've never gone to before, because then you will get different feelings and different emotions.
Yeah.
You know, if you went to something big in the cathedrals or something like that, you would experience something different. And I don't think that's a bad thing to do at all, you know. So that would be, I think that's where I'm at. I think, look, from the early times, this has been commemorated.
Yeah.
It's about our identity. So I don't think we can ignore it.
Yeah.
I don't think we have to get obsessed about our own feelings about it. I think we have to shape a practice that will help us engage with the story.
No, thanks, mate. I think that sounds great. And I intend to do that. I guess I'm speaking as one who's sort of, I don't want to say through mid-faith crisis. Are you ever through the mid-faith crisis? I'm not sure. You kind
only
of,
temporarily.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's ever true. But I certainly, I certainly think reflecting on Good Friday, Easter Saturday, which I never used to reflect on at all, and Easter Sunday is really important. It's really, not that it's really important, it's just really helpful. It's really helpful to think about what death and resurrection means and the total bewilderment and non-entity that is Easter Saturday. For me, those three things reflect very much what goes on in my life in terms of joy and suffering. So we'll speak more about that this week. But this week, I think it's been really helpful to say, well, look, leading up to those 3 days and knowing that it's Holy Week and knowing that this is important, how can we come to it afresh? So what people can do, if I've heard you right, is they can jump on the link that you're putting in the show notes. And maybe I'll put those on our Facebook page as well.
Mm.
And you'll provide them with a list of the readings that they can read every day. And it will follow a chronological order of that week.
Yeah, this was based on my retelling of the last week of Jesus' life. Mm. And so looking at the timings as they are in the Gospels and saying when things happened and reading at the right time as well.
Yeah.
So you might read very early in the morning if you want to do this.
Yeah.
I think it's a way of shaping that. I also think you could move about. When I first did the book, I also did a thing which sort of replicated the distances people walked.
I remember around Ensham.
Yeah, around the village where I used to live, and people would we would walk in from Bethany, as it were, which was just over the A40, and we would do those journeys. So I think walking is very powerful. Yeah. Walking and reading, I think that really helps. So I think do whatever you can to re-engage with the story without worrying about whether you're feeling the right thing or the wrong thing. Do something different if you need to. Don't feel guilty about your own feelings, but really just try and sort of connect again, I think, with the events, because they are core to who we are as followers of Jesus.
Brilliant. Great. Well, thank you. Appreciate that, buddy. And as always, if you have any thoughts on Easter or Holy Week or want to respond to anything Nick said, or have your own rituals that you participate in now that perhaps you didn't used to, please do let us know. Send in an email to joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Love to hear from you.
Yes, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate that. Thank you to everyone who recommends the podcast or reviews it or just generally passes it on to friends or enemies. That's lovely. Big thank you to everyone who supports us and gives towards the podcast. That's great. That allows me to do the kind of in-depth research that I just got away with. But that's really helpful. And we will be back with you next week for, I suppose, our real sort of Eastertide episode.
Absolutely.
Which it'll be Holy Saturday itself. And indeed, great. That's become over the years quite a significant day for Mid-Faith Crisis,
it really
I think,
does.
In many respects.
Yeah,
so we will see you next week. Thank you so much for listening.
See you then. Bless you.